Mormon Stories Podcast takes a ton of work and depends solely upon listener support. To keep this program alive, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org. This is Mormon Stories. I'm John DeLynn. Today's interview is a bit unique in a few ways. First and foremost, it's unique because it was recorded 3 years ago, and I never published it. The reason why I never published it was because it's an interview of a good friend named Heather, who talks about her decision to join the church as a convert in Texas, and ends up going to BYU, marries in the temple to the son of a state president, but then later her husband leaves the church, and she ends up eventually leaving it too. Now, why didn't I publish it? I didn't publish it for a couple of reasons. First, I didn't publish it because I felt like it was really edgy, kind of out there, and I didn't want to turn people off, and I didn't want to cause trouble. And in 2007, I was going through my own crises about my relationship with the church and what Mormon Stories Podcast was about to be. And eventually, I guess I just got cold feet, didn't publish it, and ended up shutting down Mormon Stories for a long time. But I still think it's an important interview, mostly because I think Heather is a fantastic spokesman. She doesn't speak from a place of anger. She doesn't speak from a place of rage. She just speaks from the heart about what she loved about Mormonism and why she felt like she had to leave it, and how that's impacted her life. But most importantly, she talks about mistakes that we can make when our loved ones leave the church. And I think that those of us, you know, who try to follow the example of Jesus know that the admonition is to love everyone and to understand everyone. And I don't think that, you know, we'll ever be able to fully claim that mantle of Christian until we can treat those who have left the church with love and compassion. The final interesting thing about this episode is that there's a 10-minute loss of the interview, sort of 8 to 10 minutes into the second part. So we did lose a bit of Heather and I's discussion about their disaffection process. And it was corruption on the hard drive, and I've tried to retrieve it, and I can't. So that's a bit of a bummer, but I think the core message still gets through. So with that, I just want to say I'm not putting this forward to convince people to leave the church. I no longer feel like it's my duty to push people either one way or the other. But I do think it's important that we learn to understand why people leave and learn how to treat them better, because I think that would be better for everybody. And so here is my interview with the conversion and deconversion of Heather. Thanks for tuning in to Mormon Stories. Well, Heather, thank you so much for coming on Mormon Stories Podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, so tell us about a little bit about your background and how you came to join the church.
Okay, well, I was raised in a family that were not members of the Mormon Church, not really any church until I was in my early teens. My mother was, I guess the best way to describe it would be to say a lapsed Southern Baptist. My father is atheist agnostic, depending on the day, doesn't really have any religious belief at all, was very open with us about that as we were growing up. When I was about 13, 14, we moved to the small town where my parents both grew up. And before that, my father was in the military, and so we moved about every year. And so I'm sure that made it hard for my mother as far as finding a church to go to as well. But before that, we probably only went to church just for holidays and things like that. When I was about 13 or so, I got a call from the woman who is the wife of the pastor of a little country church down the road, and they needed someone to keep their nursery during church services, and they offered to pay me to do that. So I started doing that, and we started going to church there. And about a year after that, my brother and I were baptized. I guess we were saved, born-again Christians. We were Southern Baptists, and that's how they do that. And we started going to church there, and we went pretty faithfully. Especially I did until I graduated high school, so probably 4 or 5 years. Every time the church doors were open, you know, we were there, Sunday schools, church services, Wednesday night Bible studies, church camps, all of that. And then when I graduated high school, I went to the University of Texas at Austin and was really excited about that.
Go Longhorns.
Yeah, go Longhorns. And I looked for a church to attend up there. I was still interested in going to church. I was very sincere in my belief, was still very interested in being active.
Looking for a Baptist church.
Not necessarily. I was, the church that I went to considered itself Southern Baptist, but the Southern Baptist Convention is a lot looser, I think, than what a lot of LDS people would consider. It's not like, being Catholic or being LDS, where there's, a very centralized government and, everything's done fairly the same no matter where you go. And there's some central tenets, but they have a lot of independence. And so I never really considered myself Baptist, just so much as Christian.
Right.
And so it wasn't a really big deal. I went to some, just non-denominational churches, some Southern Baptist churches, some Methodist churches. I just never felt comfortable anywhere, and I'm not sure if I just wasn't finding the right church or if I'd come from a very small church and some of the just larger churches were overwhelming, but I never found anywhere that I really felt comfortable.
Now, I have a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
I went to BYU and it was all Mormon and I was all into it, but I've often thought back if I hadn't have been LDS and if I'd gone to like University of Texas or Texas A&M, most people, their college time is party time.
Mm-hmm.
What made you seek religion when you were in this new world of fun and guys and opportunity?
I think you underestimate yourself, John. And I think I hear that a lot from LDS people. And if I hadn't been born in the church, I'd have been this horrible person, or I would never have gone, or, I would have just done all these, just horrible things. And I have a hard time believing that. I like to think people are better than that. But
so No, wait.
Understand your question.
No, but you're not saying that I underestimate myself. You're saying that I underestimate non-Mormons.
Well, yourself, you said that you don't think, I don't know, maybe both.
Yeah, so I think that's a good point. So Mormons think that they're the only ones who would be moral and not party, basically.
Yeah, the church does not have the corner on the market of morality.
Okay.
I would definitely agree with you there.
Okay, that's a fair point. Okay, fair point.
Yeah.
Very fair point.
I don't know. I don't know if it was just a personality thing. I don't know if it was God. I don't know. I did grow up in a very small town where socially, church was a focal point.
Yeah.
The friends that I had were, and it wasn't that I was necessarily, a goody two-shoes, wonderful person. I was a good kid. I didn't drink, have sex, do drugs, any of those horrible things that
right.
parents worry about. But at the same time, there wasn't a lot to do in my community other than church. Most of my friends went to church. Most of the social activities in the community revolved around church. And so it wasn't difficult for me to be involved, and so maybe that was some place that I just felt comfortable seeking my social outlet.
Beautiful. Okay.
Yeah. But and I would say, that I did believe in God, that I, was sincere in wanting to be baptized when I was young. I did read my Bible, and so I was sincere in my belief as well. But,
yeah.
Socially that was some place I probably did feel very comfortable.
Okay. So what led you to the LDS Church?
Well, to back up, when I was in high school, I had a friend who was LDS. There's a very small branch in the town that I grew up with, which I think is part of a larger ward in another town now. I think it got disbanded. But I had a friend who was LDS, who's a year older than me. And we had mentioned the church. People knew, coming from a small Bible Belt community, that they were the Mormons. And so we had talked about things kind of vaguely a few times. I actually went to a snake dance with her once when I was, had to have been a sophomore or a junior, because I'm sure I was 16, or she wouldn't have invited me.
Right.
But I went to a steak dance with her, so I was friends with her. And after my first semester of college, I came home for the holidays, and I was at a high school basketball game, and I ran into her and her brother, who had just returned from his mission. And so we were just catching up on things, and he was, talking about how he had just gotten back from his mission, and she was talking about BYU, where they had both gone to school, and I think I saw them again at a friend's New Year's Eve party, And when I got back to school, I don't remember what exactly I had a question about, but I had a question about something about the church that they had mentioned. And so I emailed my friend, and I said, hey, you know, if you don't mind, you know, if you don't want to tell me, that's okay. I was just wondering, I have, you know, a couple of questions about your church.
Now these friends back home.
Yeah, these are from back home.
Was there something about them that interested you or intrigued you or drew you to them?
No, I mean, my friend, her name was Anne. She was just a sincere friend. I mean, she was my friend. We hung out. We had other things in common, and, you know, it wasn't anything particular that I can think of. It wasn't, you know, even like a curiosity about Mormonism particularly. It was just that, you know, I knew that she was my friend and that she was sincere in that, and it was something that had come up in conversation and that I felt comfortable asking her about, knowing that she was my friend and that it felt safe.
Right. Okay.
And so,
okay.
I know, yeah, nothing exciting, but I emailed her with some questions, and she said, you know, I'd be happy to talk to you about whatever you want to talk to, but I believe there's an institute nearby, and there's people there that could talk to you if you want to drop by or call. You know, they'll be happy to talk to you about stuff, too. And a week or two later, I was on that side of campus. The institute at UT is just a block off campus. And I had the address with me, and I was like, you know, I think I'll pop in. Don't have anything else to do this afternoon. And so I walked in the doors of the institute, and they had a secretary sitting out front. And I said, you know, are there any missionaries here? And she was like, no, do you have an appointment? You know, they're not here right now. They're out. And I said, no. You know, I have a friend who's a member of your church, and she said there are people here that could talk to me, and I was just wondering if they were here, if they had time to talk. And her eyes got real big, and she sat up really straight. And she was like, oh. She's like, oh, let me get your name and your phone number, and I'll have them call you.
Yeah.
And I think they did within probably 24 or 48 hours.
Sure.
Call me. And so she was very excited.
Yeah.
So anyway, then, yeah, just probably 2 days at the most. I got a call from two very nice sister missionaries, Sister Nielsen and Sister Johansson.
Hmm.
And started taking the discussions.
Okay. And were the missionaries effective?
Oh yes, they were wonderful, wonderful.
What was so good? What made them effective for you?
I don't know. I haven't had that much experience with missionaries, being a convert, you know, not being in the church from young. My gut feeling is that sisters being a little bit older, being a little bit more mature, and the fact that it's not so, I don't want to say required, because technically no one's required to go on a mission, but
you feel like
culturally
they were
expected. They're there because they wanted to be.
Yeah.
And I think that extra 2 years, there's a big difference between a 19-year-old boy and a 21-year-old
girl. Oh, yeah. Probably 4 years. Probably 4 years of maturity, right?
Yeah. And so I think that helped a lot. And Sister Nielsen, I don't want to use her first name, but she is just a wonderful person. And I think just anything that anyone talked to her about, you know, and even day-to-day life, they would see that she was a wonderful person. I actually ended up living with her for about a year and a half later when I went up to BYU. She's just a really good person.
So just honest and sincere and kind.
Oh, yeah. And you know, with any of the problems that I've had with the church or, you know, the missionary program or anything, I never could hold any of that against her, I don't feel like.
Sure.
You know, anything that was misleading, she would have never done on purpose or said on purpose. I believe there's a lot of missionaries out there like that.
And what about the discussion? So how much of it was just these missionaries, and how much of it was the content of the discussions?
The discussions, I mean, I read all of the Book of Mormon, and like, I think the discussions was like 5 or 6 weeks, and I had read the Book of Mormon within a month.
Holy moly.
And so, I mean, I went home and I read, and, you know, they would talk about things, and I sincerely prayed about it, and I was serious. I was going to decide, and I was going to learn, and I was going to figure out if this was what I wanted to do. And they were, I mean, if I had any questions, it's been a long time since I took the discussions. I should have gotten out my pamphlets and looked at them.
No, that's
I mean,
okay.
I remember talking about, you know, tithing, and I was like, oh, you know, that's okay. We do that in my church. I understand that. You know, Jesus Christ, I'm up with that. The temple families can be forever, together forever. my parents are divorced and did not have the greatest marriage, and you know, that just seemed like a wonderful thing.
So the strong emphasis on families was important to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the families. And I remember...
How'd you feel about the Book of Mormon, and how'd you feel about Joseph Smith?
You know, it wasn't so much... I don't remember there being so much focus on Joseph Smith. Like, I know that he was mentioned, and, you know, the story of the Golden Plates and the coming of the Book of Mormon and everything. I don't remember there being a lot of emphasis on Joseph Smith.
Okay.
And I'm sure there was. I mean, I'm sure they taught me whatever they were supposed to about that. I remember being more concerned and focused on the Book of Mormon, and that's why I was, you know, I was going to read this, and I was going to know what this was about before I made a decision. I didn't know a lot about Joseph Smith at that point. I wasn't really concerned with it. I was going to, you know, if this book made sense to me, then... And I, you know, prayed and received an answer about the Book of Mormon, then I figured, you know, Joseph Smith must be okay if he came up with this.
Right, yeah.
The church focuses a lot on Joseph Smith, but I think coming from a Christian background, I wasn't going to be concerned with a man.
Sure.
I was going to be concerned with this book, which was supposed to be the Word of God, in the same way that, you know, I don't worry about who wrote what book of the Bible.
So talk to us just real quickly about your experience reading the Book of Mormon and what you loved about it. And sounds like you were converted through the Book of Mormon and your relationship with the sister missionary.
Yeah, that's probably fair to say.
Did you feel the Spirit?
I felt the Spirit when I read the Book of Mormon, as, you know, the church would define feeling the Spirit. You know, I felt good about it when I was reading the Book of Mormon. I felt it's coming from a Christian background where, you know, the Bible has been written and it's closed and it's done, the idea of more revelation, and especially coming from a Christian background where having a personal relationship with Jesus Christ was emphasized, you know, having more words of Jesus Christ and more teachings of Jesus Christ is an exciting thing.
Yeah. Sure.
Because, I mean, coming from my background, this is what Jesus said, and the Bible is closed, and this is all you're going to get. And so having all these new things to learn. And I've always been someone who's enjoyed learning.
Yeah.
I would stay in school forever if I could have someone pay for it.
Right.
So that was a really exciting thing for me.
Okay. So the Book of Mormon and the sister missionary led you to baptism. How about your church experience? Did you go to institute dances or meet friends?
I had friends at the institute. I don't...
Did you get love bombed?
Probably. I had some really good ward missionaries who really worked to make me feel included. I don't remember going to any state dances or a lot of institute social things, but I think I started taking the discussions in February, probably, maybe early March. And then I was only at UT at that institute for a semester, and then I went home for the summer. So this was probably only about a 3 or 4 month period, so I didn't have a chance to get too involved in the institute there. I mean, I remember family home evenings and different, you know, fun things, going to see movies at people's houses, things like that.
Right.
But it was more, there were certain people in the institute that really... And I know that one of them was the ward missionary, and I have a feeling now, looking back, that some of the others probably were too. No one comes up and introduces themselves, "Hi, I'm the ward missionary, and my job is to make sure
to get you in the water.
And to, you know, make sure, you know, to be your buddy. You know, I'm your assigned buddy." And I don't, you know, say that trying to be rude, but that's kind of how it is. And no one introduces themselves as this, but I look back, and that's probably... There's a handful of people who really made an effort to make me feel included and to be my friend. And I didn't feel that it was insincere.
Yeah.
You know, they were generally nice people.
Yeah.
But I remember, you know, just having those certain people who really reached out and were friends more than things I did with the Institute.
And did you have the definitive get on your knees and pray and get an answer, or was it just more the process felt right?
I did get on my knees and pray and felt good about it. I wouldn't say that it was, you know, a mind-blowing spiritual experience or anything like that. I think it was more reading the Book of Mormon and feeling excited about that, and I'm feeling excited about the possibility of the church. The missionaries, especially knowing that I came from a religious background, I think emphasized that we're going to, you know, come and join this church, and we're going to take the good things from your church and just add on to it, and it's just going to be, you know, more good things. And so that made me feel more at peace, you know, in converting. And
yeah.
Yeah. And so that helped as well. I lost my train of thought there.
Oh, no, it's okay.
But yeah.
So you got baptized.
Mm-hmm.
And where did it go from there?
I decided to transfer up to BYU after that first year at UT.
Okay.
I had heard, you know, good things about that, and my friends were up there, and
the missionaries, kind of the former missionary. Well, oh,
my friend from high school was up there, and the missionaries, they had both gone to BYU before and were planning on returning, and I had heard good things, and I thought, you know, this would be, you know, I was very excited about the church and a good way to, you know, be in Utah and learn more about the church and have a chance to take these religion classes, and I guess it felt kind of like, you know, going to Zion, and it was going to just be this great experience where I was going to learn everything.
Yeah, sure.
That, continue.
Absolutely. Yeah, so how did BYU go for you?
Oh, goodness. BYU is a whole different world than Texas and UT, than anything I think I've experienced up to that point or since, probably.
Yeah.
It was interesting. It was culture shock.
Uh-huh.
It was very different. There are a lot of things that no one mentions to you when you join the church that I think some things are probably sidestepped and some things people just never think about telling you about.
These are things that came out at BYU?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
What came out at BYU? Well, first of all, let's start with the positive. What did you love about BYU? Or if there was anything. I mean, I don't want to bias you.
Things I enjoyed about BYU. It was a smaller campus, and so it was from UT.
There aren't many universities where you could say that, but University
of
Texas is one.
I know, that's what my husband always tells me, because he was a freshman at BYU. He gets a little offended.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not small.
Yeah, Texas has, what, 50,000, 50,000, 60,000
students?
Oh,
at the time, it probably has more than that now.
Yeah, okay.
It's more sense of community. It's not even the amount of students. It's, you know, at UT, and it was a good thing. Like, I enjoyed that about UT. You know, you're one of 50,000. You've got hundreds of people in all your classes. You're kind of a face in the crowd, and there's that anonymity.
Sure.
And, you know, I enjoyed that as well. At BYU, you live next door to the same people that you probably have a religion class with, and you also go to church with, and you also have family home evening with. And so it does build that sense of community, which is a good thing, you know, especially for, you know, a young kid going to college for the first time. It's nice to have that comfort and that community and that sense of family.
Right.
You go off to school. So that's very different.
Sure.
And even though I wasn't a freshman in school anymore, it was kind of the first time I had that experience, that camaraderie. So that was nice.
Okay. So what was hard?
What was hard? It was, I went from, when I was at UT, I lived in a dorm where I had boys living on my floor, no curfew, anything like that. So I went from living in a dorm at UT to living in an apartment at BYU where I had way more rules than I had, you know, the year before. And that felt a little bit stifling. That was a little bit odd at first. I felt like I was being treated like a child a little bit.
Now, this is going to
watched over my shoulder.
This is going to sound like a weird question, but was mm-hmm. that because there were honor code things that you didn't want to obey? Or you were cool
oh, no.
with the honor code, you just felt like it was, you were being treated like a child?
No, I mean, even when I was at college, I did not drink, I did not do drugs, I had a boyfriend the entire time I was there with that I did not sleep with. You know, I was probably pretty boring, especially by probably a lot of the standards in Austin. I was a pretty tame person. It just wasn't my personality to be crazy. And so I think that was probably part of it, too. I was like, okay, I was a good kid. You know, I wasn't going to do anything stupid. I can have a boy sitting in my room on my bed and not get naked.
Interesting.
I can, you know? And so, and especially knowing, hey, I'm a responsible person. Why are you treating me like I'm 14 all of a sudden?
Okay.
I don't say that in an angry, resentful way. It was just kind of, it was almost confusing.
Right.
Especially, you know, where you come from a church that talks so much about agency. It's so much about having choices and free will.
Yeah.
But you're not going to trust me to make any.
Yeah, missions are the other places where that's the feeling. When you go on a mission, you just feel like, I can't even pick, you know, sometimes I can't even pick the music I'm going to listen to. I can't, like, read a newspaper. That sometimes mm-hmm. that's the only other place, in addition to BYU, where you just feel completely controlled. Sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So it wasn't upsetting. It was odd. And it was a little confusing.
Okay.
I think the other huge thing probably that happened when I went to BYU is a couple of weeks after I got there, I found out about garments, and I had no clue, and that was probably a little disturbing.
Okay, so you converted to the church and had never heard of garments.
Baptized, I moved up to Utah, I had no clue.
Okay.
I was clueless, and I was in the laundry room of my apartment complex one day. And there was a guy in there doing his laundry, and he dropped his garment shirt.
Uh-huh.
And I picked it up, and I happened to notice a marking on the chest. And I don't even remember exactly what I said. I made some joke about his sewing skills.
Oh.
And this guy turned ashen. I felt so bad for him now in retrospect. He was just like, he took it from me real quick. And he was just like, these are my garments. And he was just, and he didn't know whether to be confused or offended, or is this girl just being very irreverent, or is she really just stupid, or,
yeah.
I mean, I could just see all these emotions going across his face. And I was just kind of like, okay. And I just looked at him, and I went back to my apartment, and I asked my roommate, I'm like, what's up with him? What's going on? And she just kind of looked at me funny, and she tried to explain as tactfully as she could, about temple garments.
Yeah.
And
how'd you feel after you learned what they were?
That was hard. I think my heart just kind of sank into my stomach a little bit, and I was just like, okay, what did I just get into?
Uh-huh.
Because, I mean, my family wasn't really happy when I joined the church, and they were really not happy when I decided to go up to Utah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had kind of, I don't want to say I cut ties completely, but I mean, I had probably damaged some relationships in deciding to do this.
And what about garments made you think, uh-oh, what did I get into? Was it just...
You're going to wear a certain underwear for the rest of your life. That's kind of big. You know, why did nobody tell me about this? And what else, what are they hiding from me? What's really going on? You know, when we talked about the temple, nobody talked anything about, you know, wearing underwear or anything like this. It's just supposed to be this great place where you go and commune with Jesus, and you know you're going to be with your family, and it was just,
yeah.
Not so much the garments themselves. It was just, why did no one tell me this?
Okay,
this is kind of a big thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so what? How were religion classes at BYU for you?
I remember at the end of my first. I think it was the first Book of Mormon. It was either that or the Doctrine and Covenants. I think it was the first Book of Mormon class. And I went up to my professor. I took the class from Ray Huntington. And I went up to him in the end of the class just almost in tears. I was like, I can't do this. I don't know anything. All these people, you know, have been in seminary their entire lives and gone to church. And, you know, I've read this, but I was just really overwhelmed, and I was going to fail this class, and I was freaking out a little bit about it. And he was so nice, and I really enjoyed those classes. It was nice to have someone sit there. I mean, because it was all new to me,
yeah.
To have them explain and to go over and to listen to all this and to feel like, you know, I was really learning something.
Sure.
And Brother Huntington was a wonderful man, and I ended up working for him for about a year as his teacher's assistant.
Okay.
And he was very, very helpful and understanding. And pretty much everyone that I encountered was pretty nice and pretty good to understand. You know, I would go up and I would make a point to explain, you know, this is all new to me. I'm a convert. You know, what can I do? And I was willing to work hard, but they were all really good to work with me with that.
Okay.
And I enjoyed that. And that was one of the reasons that I decided to go up to BYU. And so I think, you know, that worked out well.
Huh. Okay. So religion classes were okay.
Mm-hmm. The ward was a little different. That was a little bit. It's a little more uptight than it. And Austin and UT are such a liberal, hippie place anyway. I think.
Yeah,
but you get a lot more. I don't know.
Bit of a culture shock.
A little culture shock. I got my first calling was to play the piano in Relief Society, but I didn't know how to play the piano. That was another shock. Because I thought, you know, the bishop is going to have this inspired revelation and tell me what I'm supposed to do to serve the ward, and this is going to be my first calling. And, you know, I was just really hyped up and excited, and I went in, and he sat down, and he was like, okay, sister, you know, I'd like to extend this calling to you to play the piano in Relief Society. And I was quiet for a second, and I think my response was pretty much word for word. Well, Bishop, you know, I don't know how to play the piano, but I'll learn.
Oh, my gosh.
I was going to learn to play the piano because, you know, that's what the Lord wanted me to do. And he started backpedaling. And he was like, no, sister. He's like, you know, just give me 30 minutes and I'll call you back in. And I think he ended up calling me to be the chorister instead. And he had gotten, I think there was someone else with my name in the ward, and he had gotten confused. But
was that a letdown for you? Were you expecting something different?
No, I think I had a pretty good sense of humor about it. I was surprised, but I just had a really idealistic view of it going in.
Which was what?
I mean that the church was going to be, you know, perfect.
Yeah.
And good, and this is, you know, the Lord's one true church on the face of the earth, and that was probably youth and naivety too.
Sure.
But I think. You're also led down that path to believe that you know, this is the bishop, is the Lord has called him, and he's going to give you a calling, and, you know, that all of this is directly inspired by the ward, and he's praying over all these callings, and so it was kind of, it's just kind of a mixed message.
Sure.
And so it's trying to rationalize it all out and find a balance and figure out where things actually stood.
Yeah, I can see that. So I noticed that you you studied under one of my favorite professors at BYU, Bill Bradshaw.
I did. And I didn't, I feel bad because at the time I didn't know much about him personally, as far as, I didn't have an idea that Sunstone existed, but he was wonderful, and he was a breath of fresh air. And I think there were times when I would just start to feel really stifled, and everyone around you is, you know, very conservative and staunch. And then I would go to a lecture and we would be talking about evolution. And it was kind of like, oh, okay, you know, there are people in the church that, you know, not everyone's the same, and that's okay.
And did you ever have a personal friendship with them or anything, or just?
You know, I went to his lectures and I knew him, and, you know, at the time I was in his class, he knew my name, but I mean, those are huge classes, and I don't expect that he would remember me.
Sure.
But I remember looking up to him, and I remember that being a positive influence at BYU, especially towards the end of my time there when things were a little more difficult with the church.
Yeah. The listener should know that Bill Bradshaw is an amazing man. I took religion from him. He taught honors religion as well as biology. He would teach evolution in a class of 900 people and not really back down from it, and his religion classes were very much about a more open-minded, thoughtful view of faith, but also very faithful. He's a former mission president. I think he's been in stake presidencies before. Harvard graduate, just a brilliant guy. But the important thing to mention, and this is just interesting, is that he's a total Sunstone guy. He's been doing Sunstone presentations for years. And a lot of times, members of the church today look at Sunstone as this dangerous thing. But what you're saying is that when you were feeling desperate, a Sunstone professor made you feel comforted, like there might be a place for you in the church.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just, you know, there are times when you would sit in Sunday school or in a fast and testimony meeting, and somebody would get up there and just say something totally, you know, outrageously Mormon, you know, about, you know, evolution not existing, or I don't know. Just, I mean, sat in a Sunday school, and someone would get up and say something, and you just feel embarrassed for them.
Sure.
And you know, it's nice to go to class and hear someone saying all the things you are thinking.
Yeah.
And knowing, you know, this is someone who's older, has been in his church his whole life, And even knowing that the, you know, half the class in front of him probably disagrees with him and thinks that he's going to burn in outer darkness, he doesn't care, and he still has a place in the church.
Yeah.
And so that was very comforting.
Yeah. Well, tell us about how you met your one true love.
I met my husband. Actually, he was sitting on the couch of his apartment, and I walked through the door one day, totally randomly. My roommate's cousin was managing his apartment complex, and we had wanted them to do something with us, and they couldn't. And they said, "But there's this nice apartment of boys across the hall." And I looked at my roommate like, "No way, I'm not knocking on these people's door that I've never met before." And she knocked before I could walk away. The door opened, and my husband and his roommates were sitting there. And they ended up not being able to go to do this thing with us, but he got my phone number from the management because I lived with a cousin and called me a few days later. So that's how I met my husband.
So you fell in love.
Totally. Yes.
Fell in love. And what type of family did he come from?
He has seven siblings, and his father is a stake president.
Okay.
So that's that kind of. They're very, very devout.
Very devout and conservative.
Very devout. Pretty conservative. They're really good people. And
sure.
They've been really good to us.
But so,
they're very... His parents were adult converts, so there's not, you know, a lot of far back pioneer heritage or anything like that, but they're very, very devout members of the church.
His dad's still a stake president, is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So he took you to the temple.
He did. We did get married in the temple.
And how was your temple experience?
Well, the temple, especially because I don't know if you want, and there's two parts. There's my temple experience, and then there's getting married in the temple when your family can't be there.
Talk about both, yeah.
Yeah, my temple experience myself, getting endowed, that was kind of hard. I went through the temple probably about 2 weeks before I got married. You know, they wait till you're fairly close to getting married to let the women go through. And you just, I mean, there's no way to really prepare yourself for that. Even, I mean, I went to the temple prep courses and they told you to pay your tithing and to make sure you stayed chaste. And didn't really talk about the temple at all.
Right.
And, you know, no one talks about it. You're not supposed to talk about it. And so you go in really blind. And, I mean, I don't know. I don't really, because, I mean, I have no problem talking about the temple, but I don't want to make anyone else feel uncomfortable talking about it themselves. But just, you know, going in and being told to disrobe and then having people touch you, or going in and then, you know, sitting here and learning these handshakes. It was nothing that I expected.
So it felt traumatic for you? Were you just feeling
raw?
What were you feeling sitting in the chair?
I remember the initiatories being very just borderline traumatic. And I remember receiving my new name, and it happened to be the name of one of my relatives who had done all this genealogy work for my family. Like, she was a genealogy buff.
Right.
And so I was very, like, that was kind of the redeeming moment of this experience for me. That, you know, and I was very excited about that. And I tried to tell the woman who was, giving me my name and going through that part of the process with me, you know, why this was special and how wonderful this was, and she just kind of shushed me.
Right.
And so
how'd that make you feel?
Totally did not expect to be upset about this still.
Oh, it's okay. When you're ready.
I was just kind of, because they tell, you know, this is, you know, you don't tell anyone this name, it's special and sacred and all of that. But it was just kind of stole that one redeeming quality of the initiatories from me. And so I just, instead of,
instead of feeling, you know, having that redeeming moment and that feeling that could have made the initiatories better, I just kind of felt more ashamed.
Hmm.
And I'm sure that, you know, that she did not mean to. She was just doing what she was told to do.
Right. I can imagine that not having been raised in the church and feeling like you're sort of a stranger among familiars, you probably feel alone a lot emotionally. And so when you reach out to somebody as a loner, maybe it hurts a little bit more to not feel warmly embraced.
Yeah, that's probably fair to say. And then as far as just the rest of the ceremony, it was just kind of surreal. It was just like, I didn't know, like, should I just laugh, or is this a joke, or what's going on? And I look across the room, and, you know, everyone else is doing all of these things, and, you know, am I going to remember everything they're telling me? And then, I don't think that the rest of the actual endowment ceremony was traumatizing as much as it was just kind of bizarre.
Right.
It was just nothing. I was just totally unprepared for it. And, you know, I know saying that there's going to be people out there that are saying, oh, well, she just wasn't ready, if she just prayed more, read her scriptures more. But I don't think there's anything in the Book of Mormon or the Bible that will prepare you for that without some other sort of instruction.
Right.
And then I remember at the end going to the celestial room and sitting there and, you know, just being surrounded by, you know, my future husband and all of his family and all these people that I wanted to like me, you know, and I wanted to be part of their family. Oh, and how do you feel? And isn't this wonderful? And, you know, how was it? And what do you think? And just the enormous social pressure of it.
Yeah.
You know, because you are going the first time, you know, 2 weeks before your wedding. And if I decide to do this, you know, what does that mean for my wedding that I've already sent the invitations out for? And I mean, that sounds really petty, but it's just, it's a lot. I mean, if you decide not to go through with that endowment and to walk out when you have the chance, what does that mean? Because it's not like I can stop it and pull my fiancé aside and be like, okay, what's going on? You know, I'm pretty much committed at this point.
Was there a part of you that was wondering whether you wanted to run away? Was it just starting to feel cultish to you, or what was it feeling like?
A little bit cultish, a little bit. I mean, and I just wonder, like, if somebody had come up to me before I joined the church and told me what goes on in the temple, I wonder if I would have believed them even. Because I had friends that were Mormons, and they were nice, normal people, you know? Someone had told me that, you know, my friend from high school's mother wore these underwear. I would have laughed in their face and told them they were crazy, and I knew her mother, and there's no way.
Yeah.
You know? And so part of me wonders if it would have even done any good if someone had told me.
Right.
But another part of me thinks, you know, well, doesn't the church have a responsibility to prepare its members a little bit better for something that's just so far outside the realm of anything you're ever going to see in sacrament meeting?
Sure.
And you know, when you go there, and especially I think it's probably the same for a young man. You know, you're about to go on your mission, and everyone knows you're going to go on your mission, and you know, they've already planned the farewell party, and, you know, and you've gotten your calling and announced it over the phone to all your friends and family in a huge conference call, or you're getting ready for your wedding, and, you know, you've sent out your invitations, and you've got your dress, and here, this is what you have to do. And so can you, I mean, anybody, no one's going to stop you from walking out, but there's some huge consequences that go along with that, and you're set there, and you've got, you know, 5 seconds to decide if you're going to go through with this or not.
Yeah.
And I don't know that anybody's able to reasonably make that decision.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know if anybody's ever walked out. I've never seen it, but I'm sure it's happened.
I've never seen it. I've heard stories, but I've never. Yeah. I can't imagine that it happens with any sort of regularity.
So over the next couple weeks before you got married, or week and a half or whatever, did that temple experience, how did you feel right before getting married? Was it making you feel bad? Were you fine with it? Did you get over it?
I went back several, as much as I could before that, because I was going to figure this out.
Right.
You know, and I was going to, you know, feel good about this, and this is what was going to happen. And
And I, you know, I came down to Texas for my endowment and then went back up to Utah because we were still in school, finishing a semester. And the Provo Temple was right there. So,
so you went a lot.
I went back as often as I could to just try to make sense of it and to make it more familiar and figure out what was going on, I guess.
Did that make you feel a little better?
A little bit.
Uh-huh.
I didn't do initiatories again.
Yeah.
For a long time.
Right.
But a little bit. I think it, I don't know that I necessarily felt anything very spiritual in the temple or understood it any better, but I think the familiarity helped.
Right. Right. So getting married with coming from a non-member family. How was that?
That was really difficult. That was. My family was not happy about that. My dad was, he's not religious at all. And so I think it was less difficult for him, me joining the Mormon church, because I've been a member of the church, a different church before that, that he didn't agree with. And so now I was a member of a different church. And it wasn't such a big deal to him. I think my mother felt very betrayed when I left my traditional Christian upbringing to join the church. And then, I mean, I have two children. I can't imagine not being able to be there for their wedding.
Right.
And so that's something that I still live with. It's very difficult for
now,
me.
Now
and my husband, too.
You probably learned in Texas that if you got married in a Mormon temple that not everyone else could come, right? That's something maybe you learned earlier.
No. I can't remember. I mean, I knew about it before I got engaged. I don't remember exactly when I learned about that, but I know I didn't know about it when I was in Texas or before I joined the church. I mean, I knew that not everyone could enter the temple, and I knew that I was going to have to be a member for a year before I could enter the temple. I think you knew Baptist. I'm sure I did baptisms before that. Yeah. But I don't know when exactly that clicked for me.
So sometime at BYU, you realize that if you were to get married in the temple, your family couldn't come.
Yes.
Okay.
But yeah, that they were, I mean, my mom was just devastated, and you know, the bishop's answer was, oh, you'll have a ring ceremony, and that'll be great. But, you know, that's not the same as a wedding. And then when you get right down to it, by the time you actually have a ring ceremony, all the rules that the church has for that kind of take away from anything special that you could do in a ring ceremony that would make up for them not being at your wedding. Don't have a wedding march. Don't make it too much like a wedding. We decided just not to do that at all. We would exchange rings at our reception, you know, just with family to the side, and we weren't even going to. It was almost like adding insult to injury.
Yeah. Some people are discouraged from having ring ceremonies, right?
Yeah. And no one ever came out and discouraged it, but nobody seemed really happy with the idea of us doing it either. It's like, well, you could do it, but just make sure that, you know, you don't want it to eclipse the temple, and you don't want, you know, to do this or to do that, or, you know, to. And so, I mean, it seemed like a lot more hassle than it was worth. And
how can you eclipse the temple as a believer? I mean,
yeah, I don't know, but they were really worried about it.
Yeah.
And
so how is it for your family?
The day of my wedding, they were really calm, and by that time they were resigned, and they did really well. They wanted it to be a special day for me. They understood that it was my wedding, and so they were pretty good. I think they were resigned to the fact at that point. Before that, during all the planning, you know, the months before, there were a lot of fights and tears, and you know, it was pretty difficult.
Which temple?
It cast the Houston Temple.
Oh, it's Houston Temple. I've never seen the Houston Temple, and I grew up there.
It's a beautiful, beautiful building.
It is?
It's worth the trip. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay.
It really is.
So it was in Texas.
But it just kind of casts a long shadow over your wedding. I spent a lot of, you know, that day worrying about my family instead of, I guess, just focusing on my wedding.
But your family was a good sport.
Yeah, they were good. They came and they sat outside the temple while we got married, and they took pictures with us outside afterwards.
And how were your in-laws and the in-laws family with your family?
They tried really hard, I think. We had a wonderful, beautiful reception, thanks almost entirely to them. We were in, we had it there in Houston because we got married there. And my husband and I were at, or my fiance at the time and I were at BYU. So they were doing a lot of the planning, and my mother-in-law took care of all the flowers, and my father-in-law, you know, made a list of, you know, different hotels to have a reception at, and, you know, food and everything. So when we came down for my endowment that weekend, we, you know, ran around and planned all that. They did so much work, and they were really good to help it. I don't think they had a grasp of how difficult it was for me not having anyone there. But they really did try. They wanted, you know, to make it special, and they wanted to make accommodations where they could. I think that, you know, they were adult converts, and so they had their wedding, and then they were sealed later, and they didn't really ever have to. It was the first time that they had to deal with that. Their other children-in-law came from member families, so I think they were doing the best that they could, but it didn't all go smoothly.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So overall, as you look back, what are your thoughts and overall impressions of that day?
What are my thoughts and impressions? I remember.
No, I just mean like your overall, just your overall feeling or vibe about the day.
I remember being really stressful more than anything. I remember worrying about my parents a lot and hoping that they were going to be okay. And even, you know, when we were in the temple, worrying about them sitting outside, and I hope they weren't upset. And, you know, I hope that no one sends the temple president or missionaries over to try to convert them or talk to them. You know, and I think someone did come and give them like the Ensign magazine about temples or something like that. But
is there anything LDS people can learn or know to try and make that imperfect situation better? Is there anything that can be done that you've thought about?
It varies so much from person to person as to what someone's going to find insulting or what someone's going to find comforting. I think no one ever came and talked to me about approaching my parents about, like, to give them that magazine or to approach them about the temple. And I think I kind of wish someone had, so I could say, you know, these are my parents. This is what I'd prefer you say to them or not say to them. You know, this is how I know they feel. My parents took it really well when someone approached them, and they were like, oh, okay, thank you, and we're polite, not interested at all, but we're polite.
Right.
But, I mean, that could have gone very badly.
Yeah.
You know, you're sitting there and not being at your child's wedding, and somebody's going to come up to you and try to tell you how this is a good thing. That's maybe not the most appropriate time to do so, even though it's probably done with the best intentions.
Right.
I think that would have been prudent. But it's really hard to say. You know, it's really hard to say. I mean, I'm sure everyone who couldn't be there would be upset. I mean, I've sat outside where a sister-in-law got married, and that's not fun, you know, to be told. Especially, you know, and having a daughter, you know, and being a mother. You know, I carried this child. I gave birth to her. You know, I fed her from my body, and you're going to tell me I'm not worthy to be at her wedding. It's just ridiculous. And so, especially now being a parent, I have a lot of regret about that. And I don't know that there's much that could be done.
It's just a bad situation for...
It's just a bad situation.
For the outsider.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to provide feedback, please check us out at mormonstories.org. If you want to help keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider either making a financial contribution or spreading the word about this episode through your blog, Twitter account, Facebook page, family newsletter, or through your ward bulletin and ward newsletter. Just kidding about those last two. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton. Check them out at claytonpixton.com or skypixton.com. That's Sky with an E, S-K-Y-E, pixton.com. Thank you.